Found a scale faster on Deel. Set up payroll for any country in minutes, hire anyone anywhere, get visas handled fast, and get back to building. Visit deel.com/day1. That's deel.com/day1.
You worked at a company for a total of 3 hours. What the hell happened?
Yep. It was amicable. I'll start with that.
Procurement doesn't sound very sexy or cool to me. Why are you so passionate about it? What's getting you so pumped to solve this?
So ProcurePro is a digital procurement platform for the construction industry. And so our mission is to save 1 billion hours of construction admin.
The headlines keep saying that AI is ruining our creativity. We won't think for ourselves anymore. Before we've even tried to use our brains, it's in the LLM. And sometimes I'm guilty of that.
Going through these tunnels, you lose Wi-Fi and all of a sudden, like, you don't have access to Windsurf, these Asian strike code anymore. And I briefly was like, oh man, am I useless without this coding stuff? And I'm like, no, I know how to write it. It's just more fun to do it with an AI agent. Like, I can do more work faster. I can stay in a flow state. I actually enjoy doing all this sort of work.
I saw you were on a unicorn watch list. I mean, there are worse lists to be on for sure. What would get you there, do you reckon? What would get you to unicorn status?
Hello and welcome to In the Blink of AI, your front row seat to the AI revolution. I'm Georgie Healy and this week we are joined by Tom Newby. He's the head of AI at ProcurePro. They're in the headlines because they're on path to reaching unicorn status, but way more importantly to me, he brought amazing receipts to literally the spiciest questions I've ever asked anyone. Obsessed. If you listen to the whole show, you will know why OpenAI might be stagnating more than they like to admit. Bit awkward seeing they just launched in Australia. The $42 billion gamble that Australia is playing on data centers and why it might not work out and why you are not lazy if you use LLMs. This is a constant rhetoric about, like, we're losing our creativity. We're not thinking properly because we just immediately ask LLMs all our questions. We talk about what we were doing before and no one was mad about that. Finally, the AI tool that no one is talking about in Australia and possibly one of my favorite hacks of the week ever. Let's dive in. This is in studio this week, so if you want to watch that online, check that out. And at the end, I have a few shout outs. Thank you everyone who wrote in messages last week. Let's dive into the show.
You're listening to a day1.fm show.
I'm thrilled to be partnered with Stripe for today's episode. Did you know that Stripe Startups offers early stage venture-backed startups access to Stripe fee credits, expert insights, and a focused community of builders? We love builders on In the Blink of AI. Apply today at day1.fm/Stripe. Do you want to start us off with your favorite AI hack of the
week? I think I'll plug a tool that I've been using a lot at the moment that I don't really see getting mentioned much in Australia, which is Hex. So Hex is a sort of a data analytics platform, and they're really built around notebooks. So it's really built for data analysts originally, and it just, like, fits into your process and makes sense. But they recently just launched their Threads agent, they call it, which is like a conversational. It's basically a data analyst in a box, like an AI data analyst. Ask it some natural language questions, and it's not just, like, really basic queries that it's doing to answer stuff. It's actually doing the work of a data analyst. And then with that output, the data analyst on your team can jump into it and validate that information and sort of pick up where it left off and keep going with it.
I have
super good.
Never heard of Hex.
Incredible.
H-E-X.
H-E-X.tech.
Ha. Huh.
It's great.
Love that. You've come in strong. Mine's a prompt. This really would not have existed if I tried it a few years ago. I was telling our amazing producer here, Jake, that we've got an outdoor area which is just hideous. And, you know, summer's coming. And I took photos and just said, very low budget, very low effort. How can I improve this space, right? And there's a pool. It's a rental. Don't think I've got the most bougie situation. But it was amazing. I couldn't believe it was telling me, you know, this is the low-hanging fruit, like painting the back fence, which is just raw exposed metal, it was like, it looks like a prison. And I'm like, it does look like a prison.
A prison with a pool, though.
A prison with a pool. A good, high quality prison. Yeah. But I wasn't even thinking of that. I was like focusing more on, I don't know, like maybe we get a pool chair and things like that. So not the things that would have added value. And it mocked up before and afters. And even just, you know, should I paint the fence or should I put, you know, those bamboo rollout things on top of the fence? I would have assumed the bamboo rollout things would look better. Actually, no, because AI can mock that up for you. I was like, the paint looks better than that.
Amazing what it can do.
For the holidays, try a few of those before and after.
It's a lot easier than actually doing the renovation yourself as well.
Oh my gosh. And so democratized in terms of like, I am not going to pay a landscape architect for a rental or, you know, someone to come in and do it. So that's my little project for the weekend. Okay. We're diving right in.
Sure.
With the most random question I think I've ever asked anyone.
Yep.
You worked at a company for a total of 3 hours. What the hell happened?
It was amicable. I'll start with that. A family friend, he was like a software guy who worked on like old school ERPs, these like business systems and stuff. And I was doing some like tutoring for his daughter. And one day he's like, oh, you're studying like IT, right? Like, oh, I've got these like freelance clients I used to have years back that I do a little bit of work for them, but you know, I'm too busy to do it myself. I want you to take over it. I'm like, okay, like, but what is it? And it was like Visual Basic script sort of stuff. And I was like, I don't know. I don't think I can do it. And he's like, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. So sure enough, like 18 years old, drive to the other side of town, rock up with his business. And it's like a industrial warehousey sort of place. They set me up with this laptop. I'm basically the only person in this office and gave me this like super ambiguous, like thing to do in a system I had no idea what it was, in a program language I had no idea what it was. And I'm like, got to lunchtime, I'm like, guys, I've made a bit of progress, but I don't think I can honestly do this.
I feel like that's an interesting story because at the moment a lot of people are non-technical and being asked to become more technical. And there is kind of like a literacy gap that's scary when it comes to that. Any tips on like early days for people that are like, I know I want to be more technical, but I don't know what I'm signing myself up for. I like, oh, I'm the AI lead now. What the hell does that mean? Are there any early signals that you'd say to look for?
I mean, I feel like coming back to that example was like, if I had ChatGPT, then I could have just asked the dumb question that was really hard to answer at the time, which is, what is all this? Like, what am I actually supposed to do here? I think that's one of like the little secrets about these AI, you know, ChatGPT and the likes, is like you can ask what you might have otherwise called the dumb questions, but you don't have to ask them publicly. So all that like imposter syndrome stuff, like ChatGPT is not going to snitch on you. Just ask those dumb questions and go for it.
I 100% agree. It may snitch on us.
Well, not if you keep paying them, so.
Okay, good, because I'm scared if it does. The questions I've asked on there, nuts. Tom, I will get on a soapbox for a second and say everyone, or at least the headlines, keep saying that AI is ruining our creativity. Yep. You know, we won't think for ourselves anymore. Before we've even tried to use our brains, it's in the LLM. And sometimes I'm guilty of that. But for me personally, I'm building more and playing with projects more now that AI exists. What about you?
Totally.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I definitely get the point of, like, your instinctive point just comes to be to ask ChatGPT. But I think in so many ways, it just replaced a Google search. It's just like a more, like, it's a more, not objective, it's just more directed Google search. You're getting actual, like, answer as opposed to having to read 5 pages to get to an answer. So I think, like, it's a bit of a cop-out to say that we've like lost creativity because we go to ChatGPT because we just went to Google search before anyway.
No one's saying this. No one's saying you used to just use Google search. Yes. That's such a good point. And no one blamed that for being not creative.
Yeah. But I fully agree as well. Like, we had this conversation the other day, like, are we kind of losing some of the fun? Like, we enjoy writing code as software engineers. Are we losing some of the fun because we don't get to solve the problem quite as much? And I think in some senses, that's true, but like if it also unlocks us to do more of this, like more of that work and like have to spend less time on the mundane stuff, like I think that's still a net win. Because we had the conversation because I think I was on the train from Terrigal to Sydney like recently, going through these tunnels, you lose Wi-Fi and all of a sudden, like you don't have access to windsurf these Asian strike code anymore. And I briefly was like, oh man, am I like am I useless without this coding stuff? And I'm like, no, I know how to write it. I just, someone might say lazy, but it's just more fun to do it with an AI agent. Like I can do more work faster. I can stay in a flow state. I actually enjoy doing all this sort of work. So I think like it's, you know, it's still fun.
Even writing questions, right? I really firmly don't like using AI to write LinkedIn posts, to write questions for the podcast, things like that. But sometimes my brain is broken at the end of the day and I write the gist of a question. I know what I'm getting at. I want to talk about Australia's AI strategy and the sentence is garbage. And I'm like, oh, like the question is there. The way I'm asking it is terrible. And I'm like, yes, thank you for articulating what I already had in my brain and it just is not working right now.
There's a problem called like the blank page problem. And so we see this with product teams, like really acutely, I can say, of like, we open up a FigJam file, we're going to start sketching how a feature is supposed to work. And everyone's on a call and just staring at a blank page and we're all silent. And no one wants to say anything because effectively everyone's like, we don't want to be wrong.
Yeah.
And this is the blank page problem because it's really hard to get started because you're trying to avoid being wrong. And sometimes like the ChatGPT and these sort of things just to spit out some answers is incredible because it might get you to a wrong answer so quickly that you can be, I hate that because
I know
of
what
this.
I hate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. The blank page thing really sucks.
Yeah, really does.
Okay. I think it's time we clarified where you work and what you
sure.
do.
Yeah,
hi.
Yeah.
So you're a co-founder, head of AI at Procure Pro. You work with my girl Shilpa. Shout out Shilpa. Tell us about Procure Pro for people that are not familiar.
Yeah. So Procure Pro is a digital procurement platform for the construction industry. And so our mission is to save 1 billion hours of construction admin. So our customers are head contractors, we call them. They're building sort of office towers, multi-story residential, schools, hospitals. They're not building like the deck out the back of your house sort of thing.
What's the biggest burning thing that you want to solve with Procure Pro?
We've effectively created the platform, like the place that the work now happens. So before Procure Pro, it is effectively emails, Word documents, Excel, share drive sort of stuff. So we've effectively created the platform that the work now happens on. And so then one of the trajectories we're going down is essentially the co-pilot sense of that whole thing. Because there is a place for everything to happen, there is a place that AI can pop in to help you do some stuff. Because procurement is just made up of a bunch of like essentially little actions you can do, as well as different like opportunities to reduce risk or capture some value essentially along the way. That is just all these micro sort of decisions along the way, as opposed to like a necessarily big ones all the time. And so the co-pilot thing is really just about popping in the right place with the right information and like connecting all those dots, stuff that essentially we've seen already replicated in many other industries really well. And there's a great opportunity for us to go there. The other one that we're going down is really just going after essentially construction, particularly procurement's just worst problems. Like they're just painful problems. So the one we're working on at the moment is called bid level. It's the one I'm mostly working on. And it's going after this problem called bid leveling, which is I receive, you know, I'm going out to tender as a builder to get quotes for flooring for my apartment tower and building. I go out to 10 different subcontractors to get prices and they all come back to me with PDF quotes, sure, but they're all in different formats, different structures. Like the prices are all structured in different ways. And my job is I've got to go through all these 10 and build a spreadsheet that says for all the different work that we need to get done, essentially vendor one, vendor two, vendor three, how much they're all priced. Because my job is I need to obviously work out like, are we getting the best price? Are we working within our budgets? But also are we choosing a vendor who actually is doing all the work. We've got to make sure everything's covered in these quotes as well. You can't just choose the lowest price and go with that.
Procurement doesn't sound very sexy or cool to me. Why are you so passionate about it? What's getting you so pumped to solve this?
Like construction is a huge industry. Like it's, I think like 13% of the world's GDP goes through the construction
wow.
industry. And procurement is like really this point, it's like they call it like the second point to protect your budget. So the first point is the price you actually like say to the client you're going to deliver this on. The second point is all your procurement of protecting your budget. It's super, super critical to get that right because that basically means whether you're going to make or lose money on this.
Yeah.
And so like us as founders, like we're product people. We love the industries we're working in and we love the construction industry. And so we've gone really deep on this problem, but we just see a really great opportunity in and around this space. And we've been working with great customers over the last couple of years who have been backing us along the way as well. And just keep essentially chasing the problems we can find there.
Okay, so speaking of which, I saw you were on a unicorn watch list. I mean, there are worse lists to be on for sure. What would get you there, do you reckon? What would get you to unicorn status?
The way that we actually get there is to continually just focus on solving those customer problems. And I think we kind of maybe are taking a different path that you would see other unicorns taking, in that we're like a vertical SaaS company. So we're going after construction industry, as opposed to a lot of other unicorns you see and hear about are they're something for every industry sort of thing. And so that's a little bit unique in itself, but that's what allows us to be like so laser focused and so deeply empathetic for our customers' problems, to actually solve those problems and stay there with them. One of our team values, our cultural values, is help the customer win. And that just manifests through everything we do. Like, as I said, we use FigJam for our product teams, for how we, you know, shape up and design and scope features. And in those FigJam files, there'll be like photos of our customers with quotes attached to them, and like essentially annotations of the stories they've told us either in a user interview or at a conference or just on a phone call about the hard lessons learned they've had there. And as we're going through like a design process, or, you know, shaping up a feature, we've got engineers and designers and product managers that are all like recounting these stories as if they're mates with these people, because they're so deeply empathetic. And that's the sort of people we want to attract to the business as well.
Yeah, I love that answer. This was a wild question to ask.
I really
appreciate that, and that's really exciting. When you reach unicorn status, don't forget the little people, okay?
Yeah.
We've got some headline news I'd love you to unpack with your awareness in the industry. The AFR just reported a push to nearly $42 billion in commercial data center construction projects. Do you see this as a good thing for Australia to be investing in that kind of infrastructure?
I mean, I think the answer has to be yes.
Well, you'd be surprised. I'm about to have someone on the show that very firmly thinks that from an environmental and climate perspective, terrible decision.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some fair merits there. Look, we've seen like a massive, massive boom in data center construction from our customers.
Really?
Because it's a lot of the similar size customers that we work with are the ones that go into the data center space. And I think a couple of them were kind of lucky during COVID that was kind of this nice mainstay, staple, safe work, because it was continuing to boom, obviously, during COVID as well. The question really to ask is like, what's the role for like public sector investment, I guess, in that as well? Because I think that's where there's some other interesting conversations. Just like, is there actually a reason why Australia has like the right to need to push really hard into this space? Is there something unique about Australia that we don't know about, like you and I don't know about, right? Like, is there something that that these data, like these big labs, OpenAI, Anthropic, the likes, Google and such, they know about Australia that we don't, that is worth investing into this space? And is some of that, you know, from the public sector spending perspective as well, like, are we actually in a place where we would expect, you know, with high electricity costs and sort of a latency sort of connection to the rest of the world, that data centers here in Australia really make heaps of sense beyond like serving Australian traffic? Because I think there's kind of this beautiful pitch of like, oh yeah, we're going to build all these data centers here and we're going to then produce all the stuff we're going to export to the world. But I just don't know how much of that really stacks up.
Yeah, I have seen this rhetoric of like, we could be the hub for APAC for data centers. That like it could be here. And there's also rhetoric around, well, if we don't build it here, we're still going to have the demand. And do we really want to be relying on other Asian nations for that? But more to the construction standpoint, putting all of that aside, say we do decide, yes, we're going to be a hub for data centers. The government's getting involved and approves it. From a construction standpoint, where do you see that working and how? Like, I have no construction background. I wouldn't have a clue the considerations that would come into building data centers. Maybe just a few thoughts on that you could think of.
They're, from what I understand, they're a little bit like industrial projects because, you know, we aren't really quite concerned about like what carpet, what color is the carpet in the data centers, those sort of things. They're more industrial in nature, but they're really like very efficiency minded. It's all about like how much you can squeeze into a square meterage. And so it's kind of one of the more interesting things is that there's been a couple of builders that have been working with, I think it was NextDC in particular, because they've been pushing a lot of the data center construction in Australia, that have been working on sort of like innovative designs that are like mixing a bit of prefab as well, so that because they're building so many of these data centers and there is a bit of like rinse, lather, repeat to it, how can we standardize these things so that we can ship more of them, which is actually really different to most construction. Most construction in like every project is entirely different. So there's not much of that, like, you know, I guess like standardization, repeatability. So there's some interesting things there. But yeah, it's really like industrially sort of style projects that are going on there.
OpenAI just launched in Australia.
I was there.
You were there?
I was there last
week.
They
didn't invite me. Oh. How rude. Yeah. So I can be really mean to them publicly on the show, of course. Yeah.
I'll be really nice to them.
Yeah, you have to be because you got the invite.
Exactly.
Do you reckon they can win the LLM race?
This is like
the billion-dollar question.
It's a trillion-dollar question, right? I wouldn't have the foggiest, hey? Like, the thing I read recently was that supposedly, I think it was verified, that they haven't done an actual like full-blown training, like model training run since like March last year. It's like 18 months.
And it's super expensive, right?
So. Super expensive. And everything since then is basically like GPT-4o that's been like essentially tweaked and optimized essentially later on.
A lot of people were disappointed by GPT-5 being like, this was not the level up we were hoping for.
Yeah.
You heard about the code red when Gemini came out.
Yeah. Well, today, GPT-5.2. Sorry to date the podcast.
What? No. Please.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Yeah. GPT-5.1 was only like, I don't know, 3 weeks ago maybe. And then
do you think that was an answer to Gemini 3? Do you think that they pushed that release just to be like, we're busy?
This was sort of what they were mentioning last week at their Australian launch of like, hey, there's something new coming. We can't say what it is. And it's just weird to see something new come out that quickly. But I mean, from our perspective, like the thing that's still strange, the common trope about OpenAI is all their models are very confusingly named and it's not getting any better. But they don't seem to have the mini models anymore. And I think there was a lot of disappointment in GPT-5, I think, from like the general consumer using ChatGPT and the likes, because it wasn't necessarily groundbreaking. But from like the development community, people who are integrating these things into products, GPT-5 mini is this like absolute beast of a LLM. It's really good at doing tool calls. So it's like the mainstay of integrating into an application. You're probably going to be working with that. But that's stopped. Like 5.1, 5.2 don't work on mini. So
that is fascinating and really good to get a peek behind the scenes of where it's being used and valued in certain communities and groups that really rate it. You're such a good sport. Thank you, Tom. What would it take you to switch from whatever your personal LLM of choice is to another model? Because in my household, I work at Google. I am a GPT advocate.
Yep.
My husband's a Gemini girly.
Yep.
And when we're on holidays, well, my model says this. Well, my model says that. Well, yours isn't integrated with maps. And like, yeah, but your image generation sucks. Like this kind of stuff happens all the time. I'm curious where you're at and what it would take you to switch.
I'm a ChatGPT person. I have been for like since like quite early on.
Yeah.
I think actually it's almost not as much about the model anymore as much as it is like the big picture user experience of it. Like I pick up my phone and the mobile app experience of that works really well. It's integrated with Codex, so I can do like remote coding things as well. And I think their sort of investment, like the commentary out of them at the moment is like, yeah, models are really cool, but they're not everything. It's actually like everything that goes around it to like make that experience work. And that was the big thing that came out of the release or like the Australian events for OpenAI was the apps SDK, they're calling it, so that you can, as a software company, you can embed your product within ChatGPT and immediately get this insane distribution.
They're really bullish on the apps.
I think that's going to be the thing that wins because it's effectively just going to be the new platform, if you will, that you start your day, you do work from, as opposed to like a Google search.
I can see it. I can see it. All right, last one on the headlines. Apparently 36% of Australians are confident in AI. They use it. They don't trust it. should they trust it, and what are the risks around the everyday user?
They shouldn't blindly trust it, that's for sure. I think the overarching principle is that the fundamentals of everything hasn't really changed with AI. And one of the key fundamentals here is to like fact check your sources. And I think that information, that skill maybe has been lost a little bit over the years. You know, we had, you know, Google PageRank algorithms that started to get quite better at promoting, you know, sane sources as opposed to the insane sources and stuff. But I think now when you get given this well-shaped answer from your chat client of choice, you still have to do that, or you still really should do the work of kind of fact-checking where that came from. And I think that may be a skill that some people have to remember to come back to. One thing that I've tried as just a bit of a fun one is, because all these chat agents, they start to build up their context and understanding of you. They save stuff even though they don't always tell you, but what they're learning about you. And of course, you start getting into the you're absolutely right territory where everything you say is correct.
Yes.
And a lot of them have some mechanism you can do, like essentially a private chat, which means it doesn't bring any of your stuff. It's like as close as you can get to like the model directly, or at least like the product, as if you signed up new. And sometimes it's good just to pull that up side by side and ask the same question again, just to see what it does, sort of taking away the bias of your information.
That is a great tip. I have not tried that before. When we used to use Google search, I would get incorrect answers all the time because it'd be blog articles and they're definitely not research and blah, blah. And I'd just waste so much time trying to find reliable sources. And I feel like we are pretty harsh on the models considering the experience overall. I don't know if you agree.
There's definitely some parts that you need to separate like the model from like the chat client, I think, as well. It's like separating the raw models from chat GPT or like the Gemini, like bundled products, you could say. And the LLMs, like by nature themselves, obviously do have their hallucination risk. And there's some stuff that they just struggle with the precision in a case where you really need really precise, accurate points on it, where, you know, a decimal place being the wrong place or a number being the wrong place is not great.
Yeah.
But I think if people's experience of using chat clients and saying they're not good, they're not reliable, is based off like pre-January 2025, so anything from basically 2024, like they've changed so much basically by virtue of having consistent connection to the internet to keep searching, that they're actually pretty accurate.
They're pretty decent.
And you can ask for sources most of the time as well and sort of validate that as well.
Any tips for leveling up a little bit, just getting from beginner to intermediate?
One of them is just trying new use cases out, sort of starting from that position of, I don't know if it's possible, but it's worth trying, because you need to essentially start building that intuition as to what it's good and what it's bad at. But to take that a step further, it's then, I think, a really practical example, a really practical activity you could do would be to take a particular thing you want to do. You're trying to get it to write your LinkedIn post because you want to generate some AI slot for LinkedIn. And don't just...
How dare you?
Don't just essentially let it produce one output and say, oh, okay, that's done. Actually throw different prompt, different examples, like test different things of like saying, hey, give me three options, or come back with questions before you write something for me. Like, we internally have like a internal AI chatbot called Julius. It answers questions about how our product works for our team internally. And the biggest thing and the most important thing we did was actually making like a Slack channel that's available internally, because it made it then this like something that everyone in the team could see. And so then people could see how other people are using it and be like, oh, I didn't think it could do that. I didn't think of asking it that way. And I think that social part of it as well is really interesting, which is where obviously you see people sharing, you know, this is what's working for me on great podcasts like this one.
Oh, stop. It reminds me of an answer you gave earlier on asking the dumb questions. If it's totally an internal related question, this Julius sounds brilliant for that, where I'm like, oh, I've already asked Tom, my manager, three times. He's definitely given me the answer. I need to know, but I can't ask him a fourth time. I'll get fired. Yep. I'd love a tool like that.
Go for it.
Yes.
Exactly.
Genius. You know what? We've gotten to the end of the interview with some spicy rapid-fire questions. Are you pumped?
Let's do it.
Actually, this first one requires my laptop. We have never done this on the show before. Brought out a laptop. All right. First one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry. Context. Our friend Shilpa said that you are amazing with identifying images. And I'm not sure if I've
like phrased that.
Yes, places. Sorry, not images, places. I've got four places to show you. Some of them are really mean, really mean. Some of them I think are less mean, but we'll find out. This is the first image.
Oh, this is going to test my history knowledge instead.
Yes. And this isn't even one of the mean ones, Tom.
Oh. Pass the laptop over.
Yeah, come have a look.
So, first of all, what I'm going to say is this must be ancientcityofpetra.webp. Because in the top left-hand corner of this image, I have the name of the place.
Sake, now I can't give you my laptop ever again.
This is part of the trick, though, is that a lot of people share information online, and there's lots of detail hidden in photos that gives away where they are. So the context is that, like, I love Google Maps. It's like my number one app. I've used it while I've been down in Sydney today, like genuinely 100 times, because looking at maps. And then when people, you know, we have a remote team all around Australia, they share photos of where they live. I then might find where they live. At least I want to find out their beautiful area that they live because they post beautiful photos of the beach down the road from them.
Publicly available images.
It's also a great opportunity to teach them about what information they share online.
Yeah.
Because it is quite easy to find
people.
Like,
surprise, you're lucky it was me who found it, not someone else.
But I have seen this image before. There's like you... Basically, for this, you'd be relying on, like, your memory of, like, historical knowledge of these sort of places.
It would be unusual if you had actually been there, I feel.
Yeah. The camels are a bit of a giveaway that it's not Surrey Hills.
I thought that I was giving you an easy win here with the camels.
Yeah.
Like, you can narrow it down a little bit by camel placement.
Exactly.
All right. You do not get the laptop ever back because all of them are labeled.
I'm not going to cheat. I won't cheat this time.
Where are we here?
These are Easter Island.
Yes! Yeah. Easter Island.
Pretty easy.
Well done.
Yeah.
Have you ever been? I haven't.
I haven't been, no.
Tell the audience what you're looking at in this photo. What does it look like?
What I'm seeing in the photo is it's obviously a, like, old historic location. Definitely not a new build here in Sydney, that's for sure.
No, construction industry had no part in this.
Yeah, I'm trying to sort of just glean from any details of, like, the people that are in the place. My guess is it's probably somewhere in, like, I can see a crucifix at the back, so I'm going to guess this is somewhere in Europe.
You're right, correct.
And, like, it's giving catacomb sort of vibes.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
This is Wieliczka in Poland. It's their salt mines. Did you know they had salt mines in Poland?
I did not know.
Fun fact. Been there. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
Quite eerie and interesting, right?
Looks pretty cool.
You'll never get this. What are we looking at in this photo?
We're looking at a bunch of rocks, and I wish my geology knowledge was better to tell you what sort of formation they were.
A bunch of rocks
in an ocean. There's some people kayaking.
Yep.
Looks like down there.
I'm going to narrow it down for you. It is in the southern hemisphere somewhere.
It does not look warm and toasty.
It's not warm and toasty.
Yeah.
Very, very good. It's on the southern side.
Definitely not the Great Barrier Reef, that's
Cairns,
for sure.
No,
not Cairns, that's for sure. You got really limited information for me to run off here, except if I obviously knew these.
Look, I gave you ocean, I gave you rocks. What more do you want?
Oh, that's like 40% of the world. That's fine. My guess is going to be somewhere in South America. Ooh, no.
Further south, 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 south. Think closer to Antarctica.
Like souther than South America.
It's in Tasmania.
I mean,
great.
I was assuming you were saying, like, you're situated in South America. Now go south from there and Tasmania is somehow located below that.
It's basically right
sure,
there.
Sure. Yeah, okay. Really cool.
Cool, right?
Yeah, have you been?
I've done this kayaking thing
is
in...
Is that you?
No, this is a random Google image. But it's a great kayak trip where they take you on, like, this speed boat around there. But I knew you'd never get it because it's just random ocean and rock. But I had to test
you
anyway.
Some people would.
Yeah. I love how you saw the... crucifix and you're like, I'm thinking Europe. And I was like, wow, that would not have occurred to me. All right. Now, I hate asking this one, but I have had permission from yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Does having ADHD make you better than non-neurodivergent folks when working with LLMs?
The normies.
I'm not saying that.
Fine, I'll say it. I guess it depends on whether, you're talking about like working with LLMs from like the chat client, or whether it's like working with them, it's like integrating them. I think overarching, like the thing that I've found with ADHD, and I found a lot of people in similar situations, is you can kind of pattern match really quickly. There's a lot of like,
really?
It looks like intuition, but it's effectively just pattern matching of information, because your brain kind of works a little bit differently, that you don't really like follow the sequences of thought quite as much, and you kind of leap between things. And so in a sense, that can be really good with working with LLMs, because there's a lot of uncharted territories with what we're doing. And so it can be really useful to have these divergent thoughts or these divergent ideas as to how we could solve the problem, or that intuition as to like, why is it kind of struggling with this problem, and then trying to like engineer a solution around it. But it can kind of come at a bit of a con as well of, with that, if you don't have the ability to have that like sequence thought when you're trying to solve a problem methodically, which is like the engineering part of solving the problem, that can still be a challenge, obviously. But I think it's a net win. Like just the simple thing of LLM spit you back like a bunch of text, code, whatever it is, super quickly. Like my brain works really quickly, and I can read that really quickly and then move on to the next thing. Like, because my brain just works at that sort of speed.
As a startup founder, you're juggling multiple priorities, from the expected, like finding product market fit, to the unexpected, like customer requests for SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification. Achieving compliance is time-consuming, and time spent on that is time away from the needs of the business, and that's where Vanta comes in. Vanta is the all-in-one solution for startups to come compliant quickly and build a security foundation with ease. With a combination of automation, an extensive partner network, and a security marketplace containing 385 plus pre-built integrations, Vanta provides the necessary tools and expertise for startups to achieve compliance seamlessly, no matter how urgent your needs are, and at every phase of growth. Over 10,000 leading companies, including CipherStash, Handle, and Indebted, trust Vanta to automate compliance so they can focus on growing the needs of their business. Here is the important part. Startup listeners of the show get $1,000 off if they go to dayone.fm/blink.
Can I ask you, when you knew you had ADHD and how that felt, like how old were you, and were you already like in engineering and technical at the time, and then it was like, no wonder I'm so fucking good at this, like how did it feel?
It's like 2 years ago my diagnosis was.
Really? Yeah, okay. Were you like, bingo?
And it just happened because other software engineers, like friends of friends sort of stuff, were all talking about it in some other Slack channels and stuff, and the things that they were describing, I just assumed the stuff that everyone struggled with, but apparently is kind of unique-ish, at least to ADHD. Yeah. And so it was, I guess, reassuring in a sense to know that those things that I struggle with aren't like a character trait flaw sort of thing. There's a reason kind of why that's the case. Bit of a sort of worry and anxiety, like I'm medicated, that then it'll make me less me. Which has not been the case at all. Like, it still have all the traits that I love about having ADHD, essentially. But yeah, it was well and truly years into it. And it's one of those things where, like, looking back, we're like, oh, that makes so much sense. Like, I taught myself to code at like 12.
Oh my gosh. And
I was building things all during high school. I did well at school, but every time all day I was at school, all I was thinking about was the side projects I was building at home. And it's like, oh yeah, that's not normal. That's not a normal thing to do. But it's also just part of the DNA of why I became a founder as well. The bits that make me work is I just love bringing new things to light, creating things.
I'm sure there'll be lots of listeners that will be like, hell yeah, that's how I feel. How does one cheat at 7-Eleven online games? And what does one benefit from the outcomes of that labor?
So again, like teaching myself to code at like 12, there was a promotion that ran over like a summer, like when I was a kid, for 7-Eleven. That was like it's kind of like an online like air hockey sort of game. I was, again, learning to code. So I'm like, how does this work? And this is obviously like 20 years ago. So you could just right click inspect source because there was no like minification protecting of stuff. And you're just like, I was just pouring through this code trying to work out how it works. And eventually I worked out like, I think I can just change my score. And I did. And it worked. I'm like, oh, cool. And then at some point you realize you can exchange them for like Slurpees essentially.
Hell yeah.
And so you exploited that for a little bit, but the problem was you had to like walk down the road to all the way to the 7-Eleven to get it.
And you're 12, so you're not going to drive to the next suburb over. Okay.
And you have ADHD, so you basically rely on novelty. So once you've done it the first time, you're like, cool, well, that problem's solved. Move on to the next one.
What flavor did you get?
It was always Coke and raspberry.
Both.
And if there was blue, top it off with a bit of blue. Blue is a flavor, not a color.
Blue flavor is. Okay, maybe I have a form of ADHD because I can't mix flavors. I cannot. Never the two flavors of anything shall meet.
I mean, I'm not like a mix them all around. Ooh. Bit on top, bit on bottom. It's fine.
But then they mix.
Just a bit of spice.
Too much spice. All right. I love this. You have a baby that turns one on Boxing Day. That's so soon. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You've got a while before this becomes an issue, but what do you think when it comes to education? I don't know about you, but my parents were very like, you go to uni, you study engineering or law or like that. These are the paths that will always give you like a very stable outcome and future. Have you started thinking about that yet, or are you like that? That is for a decade for me to start worrying about that.
I mean, like definitely a bit of the latter, that it's a while off, and understanding what that context is going to be like is really
so hard.
Because what we had 2 years ago is entirely different to now, right? That said though, like I've held a position for quite a while that engineering, my view, software engineering at least, should be more of a trade than it currently is. Like my personal experience was I went through uni. Again, maybe the ADHD here, but I went through uni and I was working instead and doing my own things and having a great time and was fine during uni and technically ticked all the boxes and technically learned all the things, but I didn't actually really learn them until my first like 2 years in the industry and then just learnt everything really quickly.
Using the tools hands-on with real problems, not all this theoretical stuff. I couldn't agree more. Like I did engineering at UQ as well.
Oh.
Friends.
Oh, nice.
I don't really know why I'm doing double derivatives. And I did, but what?
Which this is my story going through uni is that, again, like the message you got from family was like, oh, software engineering's like, I don't really know anyone who's a software engineer.
Yes.
But you would have been the same thing. Queensland, engineering, mining, boom. So it's like
metallurgical and chemical. Why? Queensland.
Exactly.
I saw the graduate salaries and I was like, bingo. Do I want to live in the mines?
No,
I actually don't.
So the consolation we made was that I did like electrical and IT because it's like kind of hedging your bets a little bit.
To the listeners, by the way, that is the hardest engineering. That is the hardest one.
What, electrical?
Hell yes.
It makes me feel better about dropping out 2 years in.
No. Oh my gosh. And we both know the worst one. Let's say it together.
Civil. There's nothing civil about a civil engineer. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, one more question for you. Queensland tech scene, is it ever going to compete with New South Wales and Victoria? And I say this as a strong Queenslander that loves Queensland. Does it need to compete? Will it compete? Do you want it to compete? What do you think?
I'd like it to compete. I don't think in a reasonable time horizon it'll beat Sydney or Melbourne, just from like sheer numbers of population, the size of the scene and stuff like that. Like I've been down there a few times recently. Like it's really great. Like there's really active down here in Sydney and you can meet a lot of founders and there's a lot of energy and buzz that it's there in Brisbane. Like it's definitely there, but a lot of these people are just quietly at home doing their work and being quite successful in it as well. So kind of a different scene. But I'm still like bullish and optimistic for it. I think the problem is that we don't have the like success story. Like the story goes that big company, or the company starts, they become successful, and then a bunch of the early stage employees get a bit of ESOP, or they have a successful like exit themselves, whatever. And they then go start the next company. It's the generational, then the ex-Canva, ex-Atlassian, ex-Safety Culture, then they start their own little business, thus sort of fulfilling the cycle of creating the ecosystem. We haven't really had a lot of that in Brisbane yet, which is maybe a bit of a shame, and maybe just part to the fact that you can't, it's difficult to scale a tech company with a large home base in Brisbane with a lot of tech talent, because there's not a lot, and you're still competing against mining, a bit of finance, and a lot of gambling companies.
Really?
A lot of gambling companies.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. There are some diamonds in the Queensland rough.
Some really smart cookies there that are just, a lot of them are like just bootstrapped and then just heads down, bums up, doing their own thing and building really strong businesses.
And they don't need to be in the front page of the AFR to be killing it.
Yep.
I've seen that too. Tom, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining in the Blink of AI. Before you go, what do people need to know to follow Procure Pro and follow you if that's of interest as well?
Yeah. The best place to follow us is on LinkedIn, so Procure Pro's LinkedIn. If you're someone who works in the construction industry, be that a builder yourself, obviously reach out and chat to us about Procure Pro. But if you're someone who works in your own construction and is also looking at making moves into construction tech as well, we're always open to those sort of conversations. And if you want to connect with me, if you're interested in AI and like building AI products and those sort of things, like connect with me on LinkedIn as well.
Legend. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you to everyone who sent in a message last week regarding Australia's national AI strategy. We had the episode with the CEO of Heidi Health and of Upcover, and that was a discussion that many of you told me that needs to be had, is not being had enough, and is not candid enough. And having those guests was just such a net positive, because they really live and breathe and build at the, what I often say, coalface of innovation, right? But more importantly, it really means a lot to me that you guys care enough to write in and take the time to send me a message, or comment or like or subscribe or do any of those things. You know, it's like that additional extra work that really makes a huge difference to the show, huge difference to the production quality we can get, and a huge difference to the kinds of guests I can get on the show. When they see, you know, how much the episodes are liked and the kind of impact it can make, it only makes the show better. So thank you so much. It was our most downloaded episode ever, and it's the first episode for 2026. So more of that to come. I can't wait. Thank you, guys, and I'll see you next week.